Thank you for having me along today, and I'd also like to acknowledge the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation as the traditional custodians of the land on which we're meeting, those of us in the room. I think it's particularly pertinent when we think about this on a topic of climate change, when we think of the custodians who looked after this land for tens of thousands of years and the care that they put into that land. So I'd like to acknowledge any Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people who are with us today, and leaders past and present. So climate change is an issue which has broad-ranging implications for the economy, for the society, and for the financial system more broadly. Average temperatures in Australia have risen 1.4 degrees since 1910, and climate experts tell us that by 2100, temperatures will be 2.7 degrees higher than pre-industrial levels. The frequency of extreme weather events is also increasing, with the number of days of severe or excessive rain and high fire danger increasing. So we've seen how climate change is already affecting people's lives in Australia and around the world, and it will continue to do so. The climate will continue to warm, no matter what our actions are now, over the next 20 to 30 years, largely irrespective of the emissions path. But our actions over coming years will obviously have an important impact on the ongoing path of climate change. Understanding the implications of climate change is hugely complex. This is for a number of reasons, including that technology is constantly evolving. For example, green hydrogen has gone from being theoretically possible to commercially viable in around a decade. And climate change is both a local and global issue. Factors like geography, industry structure, mean that the impacts of climate change will differ by community. But addressing the effects of climate change requires collective action globally. Fortunately, specialists in many fields are contributing, including scientists, technologists, and economists. The more we understand the risks and insights of all different disciplines, the better chance we have of dealing with the effects of climate change and managing the risks and the potential opportunities. One thing there is broad agreement on is that there are strong benefits to addressing the issues related to climate change sooner rather than later. If we delay, the effects of climate change will not only be worse, it will make the implications for society, the economy, and the financial system more severe. Today, I want to focus on that last aspect of climate change, the impact on the financial system and the risks. I will describe those risks and then outline how they affect different types of financial institutions, and then lead that into thinking about what financial regulators in Australia are doing to manage and create a framework that addresses those risks, and also the potential opportunities, which will assist with the transition to a more sustainable future. While we know a lot about the broad effects of climate change, there is more uncertainty about the specific aspects, such as how much it increases the frequency of severe and extreme weather events. There is also significant uncertainty about how people and governments respond. Because of this uncertainty, we tend to think about the implications of climate change in terms of risk, physical risk and transition risk, and sometimes also liability risk. So physical risk can be split into two parts. First of all, we have acute physical risk, which is the risk of losses from severe weather events, such as flooding, storms, or bushfires. While this type of risk is not new, the frequency and severity of these types of events is increasing with climate change. And the magnitude of losses from these extreme events depends on the location of physical assets. For example, more frequent and severe flooding will have an even greater impact if dwellings continue to be built in low-lying, flood-prone areas. And then there's chronic physical risk, which represents the persistent effects of climate change that influence the value of changes value of assets because of changes in their productivity or their desirability. For example, persistent increases in temperature and sea levels and permanent shifts in the incidence and reliability of rainfall can reduce the productivity capacity of some farmland or the value that people place on housing in particular areas. And with the effects ongoing, they will lead to changes in the structure of the economy, such as where different types of crops can be grown. And then there's transition risk, which refers to the risk resulting from changes in policies, technology, and people's preference that are all brought about by climate change. Policies on the pricing of emission will affect the return of emission-intensive assets, and people's preferences for green energy can have separate yet very similar effects. Transition risk will almost certainly involve changes in the structure of the economy. An important aspect here is the international dimension. Not only are changes in Australia's domestic policy preferences and technology relevant, but because of the international trade in goods, services, and capital, global changes are also relevant for Australia too. One example of this is the policy decisions and preference changes in other countries with regards to the use of coal will affect Australia's coal exports. And this is a scenario that the Reserve Bank has looked at in our previous work. And then businesses are increasingly exposed to liability risk, something which is, I'm sure, very important for people in this room. If they do not take sufficient action to respond to climate change, exposing the business, directors, and trustees to litigation. This risk exists not only when they choose not to take appropriate actions, but even if they are not informed to take appropriate actions. Information is key, and that's something that I want to come back to later. So physical and transition risk from climate change have implications for financial stability. Climate change can have a significant effect on the price of assets if it reduces future cash flows and makes them more volatile. Climate risks affect on the value of assets used as security for loans, and thereby affect the potential losses that lenders face if borrowers aren't able to make those repayments. Climate change risk can manifest in different ways for different types of financial institutions. If financial entities mismanage their climate risks, they are also exposed to liability risk. So first I'll start with insurers. General insurers have a bit of a head start in managing climate change risks because their policies make payments for damage from extreme weather events. Insurers already have in place systems for assessing the likelihood and cost of these events. But as I said, the frequency and severity of these events is generally increasing. So insurers do need to plan for that change that comes with climate change. The other thing is that premiums on general insurance are typically repriced annually. Insurance contracts typically only last for a year. And so that provides insurers the opportunity to reassess their climate risks. Insurers can adjust their premiums or even decide not to write contracts in particular locations or not to renew those contracts. So this kind of reduction in financial insurance could have significant implications for society, the economy, and other parts of the financial system. The fact that insurers might provide coverage on assets in a particular location now does not mean that the owners of those assets are going to be protected into the future. And so the owners of assets need to think about the climate change risks over the length of their ownership and beyond. Banks have less experience in modelling the effects of climate change, and so they have more work to do in putting in place the systems and the management of those risks. Not only do banks need to develop their systems and procedures to manage the risks, but they need to start by collecting the right data and thinking about how to analyse it. Loan contracts are typically much longer than insurance contracts. For example, mortgages are typically around 25 years and business loans maybe 3 to 5 years. Over those kind of horizons, the effects of climate change are going to be very significant, but they're also very uncertain. In practice, most mortgages end up having a shorter maturity because the borrower refinances, moves, or repays the loan. But if climate change significantly affects the value of properties, then the owner's ability to either repay or move may be reduced. And so the lender may find that the effective maturity of those loans written that are climate change affected ends up being much longer. Another challenge for banks is that they require borrowers to insure their property. However, due to the effects of climate change, they may find that the borrower may either not renew insurance, either because that an insurer won't provide coverage or because the cost has increased significantly. And so that provides another aspect where banks can be exposed to climate risk. If climate change means that a home isn't insured, then lenders could find that damage from flood, storm, or fire results in the collateral value being significantly lower, and so their expected loss given default on climate-affected properties is much larger. Because of the substantial uncertainty they face, banks use scenario analysis to consider their exposure to climate change depends on various parameters and behaviour. Superannuation and managed funds in Australia have a different sort of risks. Asset valuation risk is typically borne by the investor, not the trustee. So while investment funds seeking to maximise return for investors need to take into account the impact of climate change that will have on asset prices, the trustee itself does not face physical or transition risks of climate change. But assessing the sensitivity of the return of particular investments to climate change is difficult given the incomplete and inconsistent available the information that's available. While super funds don't operate as a direct channel of financial stability risk from climate change, they could easily become an indirect channel if they're contributing through asset sales. A third risk is relevant for super funds, and that's liability risks. Insurers, banks and super funds trustees all face liability risk if they don't disclose, address and manage the effects of climate change sufficiently. Ensuring they provide enough information on their exposures to climate risks is an important aspect of managing those risks. Given financial regulatory agencies have mandates covering the efficiency and stability of the financial system, we all have a strong interest in the effects of climate change. For this reason, the Council of Financial Regulators, APRA, ASIC, the Reserve Bank, and Treasury created a climate working group back in 2017. To fulfil our mandates in the face of climate change, the agencies seek to ensure that financial institutions and their firms produce and disclose high quality, consistent information about the climate-related risks and that they manage those risks carefully. These issues are also the focus of a substantial amount of work in international forums in which all of the CFR agencies participate. Each of the agencies is using its connections in these to inform domestic policy and to consider the implications for Australian entities that are active in international global markets. So the focus of the CFR Climate Working Group has three distinct priority areas over the past year, and I'm going to describe each of those briefly. The first is the Climate Vulnerability Assessment, or CVA. Then there's disclosures, and then taxonomies. The CVA is a climate scenario analysis being conducted by the five largest banks under the guidance of APRA. Australian banks have already been engaging in some analysis of their climate risks, but this is the first time in Australia that it's being conducted in a coordinated and comprehensive manner across financial institutions. The climate scenarios being used by the CBA take into account anticipated physical and transition risk out to 2050. The CBA seeks to assess the potential exposures that banks have to climate risk, understand it, how they are likely to adjust their business models in response to those risks, and hopefully foster an improvement in the management of those risks. The CBA is based on two scenarios developed by the NGFS. APRA and the Reserve Bank, in conjunction with the Australian Banking Association and the five participating banks, worked to customise these scenarios to be suitable for the Australian economic industrial structure. The two scenarios used are a delayed but rapid reduction in emissions, and a continuation of current global policies that are insufficient to meet the Paris targets. The banks have used these scenarios to assess the implications for their credit risk models and the structure of their balance sheets. The five participating banks have submitted their results to APRA in late May, and APRA is currently analysing these and looking to publish information on the outcomes and insights later this year. It's not only the banks that are going to learn from this process, but the regulators will also learn how better to assess and manage risks from climate change in the financial system. The CVA should also help with the second of the CFR climate focus areas, which is facilitating the development of climate-related disclosures. High quality and comparable disclosures are important to allow investors and counterparties to have confidence in how firms are managing their climate-related financial risks. Given firms and investors operate internationally, there is a strong global dimension to the need for disclosures. Right now, the most widely recognised standards for disclosing climate-related risks are the principles created by the TCFD. The regulators in Australia have endorsed the TCFD framework for effective disclosures, which recommends using scenario analysis to assess the risks from climate change. Last year at COP26, the International Sustainability Standards Board, or ISSB, was created to work with the TCFD and others to develop a comprehensive set of reporting standards that are integrated with existing global accounting standards. You can think of this as being a more specific and prescriptive version of the TCFD principles. The ISSB released exposure drafts in April, and ASIC met, along with other members of the CFR, met with industry participants and worked in developing a joint submission from the regulators on these draft standards. The ISSB is hoping to finalise key decisions by later this year and then broaden out to other areas of sustainability. The third area of focus for the CFR Climate Working Group has been taxonomies. In essence, this is about providing scientifically based definitions for what could be considered green or sustainable. Having widely recognised and used definitions increases the quality and consistency of information available to financial market participants, and so contributes to greater efficiency and improved management of climate risks. While we want consistency, the definitions need to be appropriate for the structure of a particular economy, noting that countries have different starting points for transition to net zero. For example, a country that has relatively high carbon intensity, like Australia, the early stages of a path to net zero may involve investments in assets that reduce total carbon emissions but are not purely green. There is also a risk that those without a taxonomy will see international investors apply definitions that they are familiar with, such as the European Union taxonomy, whether that definition is suitable for the domestic economy or not. For example, the EU may label LNG as not being a green investment unless it meets strict requirements that are not applied in Australia. But in the near term, increased use of LNG in Australia may assist with the transition away from coal while renewables infrastructure is fully developed. Having a taxonomy that is well developed and widely accepted is important for a number of reasons. A taxonomy will assist those in making and interpreting disclosures. It will also assist investors to make informed investment decisions that will drive the adaptation and mitigation actions needed to manage the risks for climate change. The CFR agencies held a roundtable with industry in November last year to discuss the potential Australian approaches to these issues. The development of an Australian taxonomy is a key priority for the Australian Sustainable Finance Institute's work program. The Australian agencies are highly supportive of ASFI's work and have joined the Technical Advisory Group as observers. So summing up, climate change can have a significant impact on the structure of the economy and the pricing and return of assets. And this means that climate change has significant implications for the efficiency and stability of the financial system. So it's critical for central banks and regulators to carefully analyse and respond to climate-related risks. In Australia, the CFR agencies work closely with each other, with their international peers and financial institutions in Australia, to improve the quality and consistency of information available for managing climate-related financial risks. But these are complex issues, and our understanding of how best to respond will continue to evolve. But it's critical that financial market participants and regulators act now to best manage the financial risks and facilitate the associated opportunities. Thank you, and I'm very happy to take your questions.
Thank you very much, Dr. Cairns. Any questions? Any commentary on your thoughts about the impact of climate change on credit and the financial services industry?
Dr. Cairns, just a practical one, and I guess within the confines of the four walls and the virtual world out there in which we're talking, how difficult is it for the RBA when you try to pass the findings of the work you do to government to get policies to change?
So we work closely with the Council of Financial Regulators on issues related to climate change. So we're obviously, we have our mandate, and the Reserve Bank's mandate is obviously for controlling inflation, employment, attempting full employment, and but we have a mandate for financial stability risk. So climate change potentially affects the operation of the economy, the structure of the economy, and has those implications for financial stability, as I've outlined today. So our work is very much involved in communicating those risks. We're not advocating for particular policies, but we do have very close collaboration with the government through Treasury to discuss what those implications are and provide our views and expert opinion where we have that. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Jonathan. It was interesting. I'm going to put you on the spot, and I don't, you know, I hope no one quotes you after this. I'm curious about the tension between the definition of financial stability and financial inclusion. Mm-hmm. Because without inclusion, we won't have participation. Without participation, that is an instability in itself. So how far through that debate does the Reserve Bank have an opinion?
This is something that gets a lot more attention in many other countries where you have weaker levels of financial inclusion. And in some of those countries, the central bank may actually have a mandate to deal with financial inclusion. In Australia, we don't. We do have very broad levels of financial inclusion, even relative to other rich OECD countries. The share of people who have a bank account is much higher here than it is in some other OECD countries. So where that was to become an issue for financial stability, then it would enter into the Reserve Bank's mandate. But where it's a very small share of the population who do not have broad financial inclusion, and for many of some of them at least, it's by choice, not all potentially. So then, you know, the implications at the moment for the Reserve Bank aren't significant, and so aren't something that enters into our work. But, you know, as I said, I mean, we work closely with a lot of the other agencies, and this is sort of more important for ASIC, for example. There's another question. Hello.
I was just going to say, when you ask a question, if you could say who you are and what your organisation is, might help the speakers.
Diane Tate from AFIA, the Australian Finance Industry Association. So this is a bit out of the remit of my finance members, but they're very interested in what insurers do. As you said, it's an interconnectivity in the financial system. So let's take Lismore as an example. And scenario that out a little further. Now, we know there's a lot of people that weren't insured in Lismore. That is inevitably going to become a public problem. It is already an insurance market problem, and it certainly is an inclusion issue. So when we start to interpret financial inclusion as not just marginalisation, but as exclusion, because markets can't solve problems because they can't price it or they're not willing, what do we do then?
I mean, that, I think that is a significant issue to consider in the risks of climate change. So, and as I said, this is an issue not, you know, the insurers can write one-year contracts and so choose to not continue writing contracts in a particular area or increase their premiums. The banks have potentially longer exposure because they might still have a mortgage written on that property, and the bank's contract requires you to take out insurance, but all of a sudden you're not taking out insurance. So then if you get an extreme event come through which reduces the value of the property, the bank's loss given default has increased. So there is significant ongoing risk for the banks. For society more broadly, I think this is a very significant issue, and it becomes a broad public policy consideration. So if you are going to have areas where insurance is either not available or too expensive relative to the incomes of people in those areas, then you get broad societal impacts where climate events are going to have severe impacts for the society and for the local economy. And where private institutions have chosen not to be providing insurance in those areas, where does the risk ultimately fall? And presumably it's going to be on the individuals, and then presumably also on the governments if they're required to step in. So, I mean, it's, you know, you need to plan and think about that. How do you respond to that? Well, you know, where are the areas that are going to be more exposed to severe climate events? And perhaps we need to avoid having assets in those areas. So, you know, reduced home building, reduced amounts of business assets as well. So that requires a lot of planning. And we need foresight about where the effects of climate risk are most likely to be severe. It's a great question. Thank you.